Hey, in this episode, we have a brand new animated Star Wars series coming. We're going to have some information about that for you. Also, the possible return of Hayden Christensen to Star Wars and some new Black Series figures. Welcome to Echo Base.
Set your course for the Hoth system. General Veers, prepare your men.
All troops will debark for ground assault. Prepare to target the main jet.
Echo Station 3PA.
On an Imperial Walker.
Attack pattern Delta. Go now. Watch that clock fire, boys. Right now, I feel like I could take on the whole Empire myself.
Target, maximum firepower.
Imperial troops have entered the bay.
Eric, thank you for that wonderful introduction. We are back, the three of us again. I think this is 2 weeks in a row. That's like, yeah, almost a record for a while.
I think so.
And we actually have some Star Wars news to talk about.
We do.
It was so literally hours after we recorded last time, they announced the Bad Batch stuff, because that was released last Monday, I think.
Yeah.
Yep. I was like, really? You couldn't have done this a day before? But so let's just jump right into this. I mean, Bad Batch, this is another animated series. And we talked last week about not wanting to go back to Clone Wars again, which this isn't really Clone Wars, but it is an offshoot from that. Are you guys excited for this? Or are you guys not excited for this? Is it?
No.
No? No what?
I don't mean to be a hater. And let me apologize in advance, by the way. Two straight days of really especially grueling 13-hour shifts, and our whole team, myself included, has what appears to be a stomach flu. So I am out of it.
Oh, man.
So don't mistake my being under the weather for just general grumpiness and negativity about the show. I assure you, I am genuinely disinterested in the show, if that's at all reassuring.
So we shouldn't be going to Eric first for commentary, because he's going to be like kind of down in the dumps, but you know, Debbie Downer.
No, I'm up in the dumps.
Kind of channeling. You're up in the dumps.
I'm up in the dumps.
Okay, so we'll come back to Eric. Tim, what do you think about Bad Batch? Now, were you a fan of the arc they did in the final season?
So, you know, I thought it was fun. It wasn't, those episodes weren't really deep, but they were a lot of fun.
So you're getting the same thing from him. He's just beating around the bush about it, Lou.
And so, excuse my video there. Oh, hey. It's back though. So in terms of this show, I'm optimistic about it. I'm expecting something fun. I'm not expecting something deep, but I am hopeful that they are going to give us some more depth with it. Since we're going to get at least a full season out of it, hopefully they'll have an opportunity to kind of explore things a little bit more depth in there. Similar to what they did across a lot of Clone Wars, a lot of Rebels and that kind of stuff. The thing actually that interests me the most about this is the setting of it. So this is set in the immediate aftermath of the Clone War. And so presumably these Bad Batch guys don't have the chip. So Order 66 is like, they're like, dude, what's Palpatine talking about? What Order 60? What? I don't know.
We don't know that for certain, though, right?
They all shrug their shoulders and they go about their own business. No, we don't know that for sure. You're absolutely right.
Safe speculation. I'm guessing you're probably correct.
Yeah, because the assumption is that, you know, they kind of continue on. And the description here says that they will take on daring mercenary missions as they struggle to stay afloat and find new purpose. So finding new purpose, they're no longer part of the Grand Army of the Republic. They are presumably not Imperial soldiers. They are working as mercenaries. So, you know, I want to see that, like, I want to see that immediate aftermath. I'm excited about the world building that they're going to do kind of in that small period of time that we really haven't seen much explored of.
Mm-hmm. So now, who do we think they're working for or with, or, you know, are they just doing their own? I mean, truly mercenary missions, like they're just hiring themselves out. Is this the A-team of Star Wars? God, I want that. I want that music to play now. Eric, can you play the music?
I know all the lyrics. If that helps.
There's lyrics?
There's lyrics? Oh, that's,
Well, there's the,
you know, I have not been able to get stupid Hamilton lyrics out of my head all week. It's but anyhow,
there's some great new backgrounds on,
yeah.
Like, Tim, where are you taking yourself?
That one looks like my bedroom there.
This is fantastic. I'm going to stay with this one. I like this one, except it does give the weird effect still around the headphones, but
yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
I digress.
No, that's okay. Nobody wants me to talk bad about this show, and you guys are apparently going to fight hard.
No. I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay. So before we move on to the, is this the A-team thing? You know, I talked on Night to the Hollow Table about what I thought of the Bad Batch set. And I thought that it was very good in a Michael Bay-ish way, but very bad in a Michael Bay-ish way. And I think that generally speaking, Filoni has a good sense of storytelling and mm-hmm. he presents interesting material. It takes a while for it to get up and running. And once it does, it's worth the investment in it. Resistance being the exception, I stand by my opinion that Resistance really fell flat, and I'm sorry to say that. I kept holding out hope all the way to the end, and just I don't care for it. But I don't think that's indicative of a direction that Filoni is going. I think that was just kind of a side thing. When he's in that flow, and so mm-hmm, I expect mm-hmm. that I will be eating these words later, and the Bad Batch series may be really good, and I'm sure he will find a way to open it up to some more epic storytelling.
That's the sound of you eating your words.
So but the thing is, it's these characters are caricatures. They're goofy, yes, silly things. Their interactions are
right,
stereotypically shallow machoism. I can beat you. Oh, I can beat you. Like it's not, when I say like it's immature and silly and then people respond with, oh yeah, it's for kids. That's not what I'm trying to say though. I'm saying it's not that it's immature and goofy. It's that it's shallow and meaningless and cardboard. And I hate to say that. I love Dave Filoni, and I love mm-hmm. Star Wars. And I hope that I'm wrong about this series. But from what I've seen so far, I have zero interest in these characters. These are some of the least interesting characters to come out of the entire Clone Wars to me.
Okay, well, actually, let's examine that for a second. Let's take a step back and look at that a little bit deeper. You know, kids shows generally have fairly cardboard type characters. They don't usually have a lot of depth to them, right? In most cases,
they have to stick with certain like definitions of those mm-hmm. characters. Like mm-hmm. this is what the character of Lou is, and this is what the character of Eric is, and they're very well defined, and that's what they do because kids have to be able to easily relate to them.
Right. But I can name all kinds of kids shows with characters that are way, way, way better than these characters, including Star Wars shows. All of the Rebels characters, all of the Clone Wars characters other than these four. Mm-hmm. And that's just within its own microcosm. If we start expanding out beyond that into Adventure Time, or I don't know what kids are watching these days, Phineas and Ferb and Milo Murphy's Law and name some other cartoons, Lou.
I'm not up on my current cartoon, so I can't help you out.
But I mean,
what I was going to suggest was that the Star Wars stuff that we get now, mm-hmm. even characters that weren't produced in, you know, movies, we're still going off of those characters and the depth of those characters, which is fully fleshed out compared to something in cartoon. And, you know, Tim, you're very distracting.
Sorry.
David in the chat room said Magic School Bus. Thank you, David. No, that doesn't really epitomize, like, and that's for a much younger demographic. I'm just going to ignore all of the thisness over here.
Yeah, I'm trying to. It's just, it catches my eye. Yeah, whatever. And I'm not trying to make excuses for it, because the characters in the Bad Batch were kind of cardboard and kind of, you know, had that whole, you know, high school pizza for lunch, you know, cardboardness to it. And they weren't fun. But if they can make the stories about these characters fun, you may get
more depth in the character as we explore the stories.
Exactly. And that's where I think I might end up being proven wrong.
Okay. I think that's where I'm hoping this is going
to
go.
I also hope to be wrong. I hope to change my tune on this. And I agree. I think this is probably, this is the one hope for this series, is that the stories will be compelling enough and epic enough that, it will be less about trying to connect to those characters, more in, we will be able to relate to the characters based on the struggles they go through in these particular situations, as opposed to relating to the characters just because of the innate character of those characters, for better, lack of a better way to put it.
It's one thing to have an
interesting personality. It's another thing to be able to relate to someone because of what they've gone through and shared experiences and, you know, what would I do in that scenario and things like that. We didn't see that in the Bad Batch arc in Clone Wars.
See, so a lot of times in the Clone Wars, what we saw was episodes that were seemingly highlighted by like tertiary characters, such as the Bad Batch guys. But those are really vehicles to drive stories that were mostly relevant to the core characters, Anakin, Obi-Wan, Padme, Ahsoka, et cetera, et cetera. And so the Bad Batch arc that we saw in this final Clone Wars series or season was actually that. So while these guys were kind of the superficial centerpiece, the story itself continued to move Anakin's story and some other related stories. So I think that now with them being highlighted in their own series, we are going to see more depth. I think there's going to be a lot more explored with it. And quite honestly, we also know that these Star Wars shows will keep things, they'll have kind of that fairly superficial element to it that the kids still enjoy, because there's a lot of pew pew and starships and all that kind of fun stuff. But then there's also that depth that the adult viewers like us really enjoy. And I think that there's a lot of opportunity in Bad Batch to kind of continue exploring some of the psychological stuff that they got into in the last few seasons. About, like, you know, that had to do with some of the programming of the clones and, you know, some of the, I mean, certainly with these guys, this lost brotherhood, that even though they were kind of this group on their own, they still had this brotherhood of hundreds of thousands of clones.
So
that now they no longer effectively have.
Right.
And so the whole context of the world has changed. And I think that there's a lot of depth to go into there.
See, I think that, so working my way backwards through your points, they kind of existed outside that brotherhood anyway. So while if it were any other clones, I would say that that could be a really compelling story. With this, I don't know that they'll even bother exploring too much of that, because they never even, there may be an episode where they do just out of obligation to have to tell that story, but I don't think that that's something that really affects these four psychologically that much, because they were always seen as outsiders by their brothers anyway. But I think if you go back to one of the early episodes of the Clone Wars, the conflict in the story is about a character whose name I don't remember, whose race I don't remember, because, as you said earlier, it's not about that character. It's a tertiary character. But they are a leader of a small community, and they're struggling with the fact that they're not part of this war. And they kind of have to choose whether to get help from Dooku, who wants to come in and, quote, help them, or to get help from Yoda, who is coming in to convince them not to join Dooku. And the guy's like, well, I don't really know that it matters much between the two. You guys, like, figure out your own issues, and then, like, we'll see where things stand. So you've got this conflict of, I'm not a Jedi, I'm not a Sith, I'm just trying to get by day to day. Like, I'm not trying to get into this whole thing, but now this is imposed upon me. So there's this conflict. And again, even in a kid show, we're still comparing apples to apples here.
Yeah.
That's really interesting and really able, you can relate to it. The Bad Batch arc, the quote, conflict was infiltration and exfiltration. There's no moral dilemma. And now I want to point out, with the exception of what's his face?
The clone that was captured.
Right. I apologize for not remembering his name. But so that was obviously compelling. And there were certain moral and ethical questions there. And there was some psychological things and blah, blah, blah. But as far as these four characters, it was just infiltration and exfiltration. There was no moral dilemma. There was no ethical conflict. There was no, I mean, it was just, it was a shoot 'em up, which is great. Action scenes are cool. Kids love them. Action arcs are good sometimes as a nice break. But so far, these characters are not that interesting to me. Lou, back to something you said in the episode of Movie Chatter where we covered Clue. You're not really much into slapstick. To me, this was action movie slapstick.
Fair enough. I can get that impression.
I hope for more.
I can see that to an extent. And I think what it is, and also given the story arc that they were in, a lot of that story arc actually had to do with Rex and kind of his continued journey with things and seeing kind of him trying to see really kind of what the clones were made of and explore that, like, hey, there's something that's not right about clones. And, you know, there's all this other stuff that's going on and things that don't add up with the Confederacy and that kind of stuff. So there is a lot that was that. And I think that another thing that these guys contributed was that they were not, when you consider that most of the clones we've been introduced to through the Clone Wars are, they hold rank. You know, you have a Commander Cody, you have a Captain Rex, you have et cetera, et cetera. These are not. Mm-hmm. You also get something that discerns them from the rest of the clones. Again, hundreds of thousands of clones, yet these handful of guys are simply different. So they're recognizable amongst a slate of those who are all the same. And it can give a little bit of interest. They do take that interest to kind of a, as you said, Eric, kind of a caricature level. With some repeated things, which do kind of venture into some slapstick.
Carrie in the chat room just pointed out that she's heard an argument that the Bad Batch is essentially the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles of Star Wars. Kind of funny, but they're unique.
And you know what? They kind of are. They kind of are. And that's the thing. So it's, you have this small, unique group that have specific talents, which are kind of stereotyped. But they also kind of help drive a story, because otherwise you can't, it doesn't make sense to have a bunch of officers, because the officers are the ones that we kind of know by name and they have some unique talents and such. It also doesn't make sense to just simply have a bunch of no-name clones who are just simply generic amongst everyone else. So to have this very specific group, it helps add some interest to the story, and they can always, you know, they can do different things, and they're playing off of each other's personalities and talents. And they also showed kind of some of their pitfalls too, which I liked as well. You know, you have each one of them had, again, not only with their certain skill sets, but also with their kind of attitudes and personalities, which in some ways they would show them being strengths, but in other ways they would show, that's a weakness, or it's at least a deterrent.
They also mostly came across as jerks.
In a lot of ways, they did. I won't argue that.
But you're right. I think that there is some individuality there that, aside from the caricature side of it, that can be explored. As we often say, you can do more in a television series than you can a movie. And in an arc in a series, if that's the only exposure you get to those characters, you're effectively, it's a movie of sorts. So I think being able to open up into a larger series, we are going to get those moments where we get to focus on individual characters. And I think that will probably help. And
there's no Jedi
that we know of so far. I mean, who's to say that they're not going to be hired to hunt down a Jedi too? I mean, back to Lou's original question, is this the A-Team of Star Wars? If you look at the story concept, it is literally the A-Team of Star Wars, right? So that, I think, is, it's a compelling type of storytelling. You've got the have-nots who need help, and they need a hero. And so you bring in a group of heroes to save the day, and then they ride off into the sunset to help the next person who needs a hero. I mean, it's a very classic form of storytelling that the A-Team television series brought into a more literal sense. You are basically hiring a group of heroes, as opposed to, you know, the old more Western or samurai sort of sense where the hero just discovers you because fate, you know, blah, blah, blah. No, this is more like you take out an ad on Craigslist and hire the A-Team. And so that's,
and the A-Team was also a bunch of caricatures. I mean, they took the personalities and the skill sets and that kind of stuff. Every 80s television
character was a caricature, Tim.
Exactly. But so looking at that, we all love the A-Team, right?
Sure.
If you say no, I'm going to reach right through the screen.
I mean, the pacing could use some improvement, but I love the A-Team growing up.
So, I mean, so that's kind of, as you said, Eric, we're working off of exactly the same principle.
Right. Yeah. And so I think it's going to work. Again, if you've got good storytelling, what we're lacking in, what I find to be a lack of interesting characters, I think you can make up for in compelling stories. And the nice thing about this storytelling concept is it makes for good episodic storytelling and good mini arcs, which is something the Clone Wars is very much known for, probably more so than Rebels. And yet, because you can always go back and revisit those locations or characters or whomever, you can also tie things into a much bigger overall arc. Conceptually, there's a lot of potential there. I think they have to get beyond the video game first person shooter class types. And by class, I mean, like, you know, the heavy versus the sniper versus the melee versus the, you know, video game class. They have to get past that. That's
what makes a good team. They've got members of the team that all do something specific.
Right.
And it makes them a good team together.
Yeah.
You know, the one thing about it, and I'm going to kind of side with Eric here for a second, because I was never a huge fan of the Bad Batch when it came out. It seemed weak. And it wasn't as good as I was hoping it was going to be.
Sure.
I'm hoping this becomes better than what that was. And I think it will, because they're going to have more time to get into the characters and we're going to learn more about them. And why, you know, what makes him different, you know, what happened, what the process was, if we can find that out, who knows. But I think overall this is good. I'm sorry it wasn't an announcement for something that didn't take place in the same era that we've had all these stories in. I wish we'd get something totally different. But
well, and of all of the things that we are getting rumors about right now, we get confirmation of the one thing that we weren't talking about.
Right.
Go figure.
But it's still giving us a story that we haven't had yet in that immediate aftermath.
And
you know, Rebels is just beyond that. Mm-hmm. But this is right there. This is like Order 66, go.
Right. Sure. Like the universe hasn't really fallen under tyrannical rule quite yet.
Right.
It's not just, you know, the end of episode 3 happens and then somebody flips a light switch and you're all being persecuted. Like there's got to be kind of a downward fall into that tyranny.
Totally.
And so I think maybe this is something we've never really seen before in Star Wars, too, as far as a time period. I think that can be really compelling. And then finally, it gives us what we've been complaining about not having for quite a while now. And that's an official announcement about something.
That's true.
That's very true.
So, yeah. Hey, you know, score.
Yeah. So from there, we're going to move on to something that's not a announcement, more of a rumor. We have more rumors about the Obi-Wan series that's going to be on Disney Plus, presumably. Mm-hmm. Talk about flashbacks to the Clone Wars, kind of in that same era now. But this means we're probably going to get some live action Clone Wars stuff, which is pretty cool. I mean, you know, we've had that in video. We've seen the beginning of the Clone Wars on movie screens. But to have a series where we're going to touch on what's probably the most, I don't know, I would say the most interesting part of Obi-Wan's story before we get to him just being
sitting
a babysitter
in a desert on Tatooine. As a distant babysitter. Really? Yeah, right. That's the most interesting thing that Obi-Wan's done? No,
but the Clone Wars part of this will be the most interesting part of that time frame.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. You know, yeah.
If we're getting flashbacks to that, we're getting that information, because otherwise it'd be him sitting in the, you know, the old hermit in the Dune Sea. Right. Doing nothing. So I think it's pretty cool. I like that thought. There's also been some talk about Hayden Christensen coming back to Star Wars, rumors recently. And if this is playing that same time frame for flashbacks to this, I mean, he would be right there by Obi-Wan's side.
I think. So the one thing I'm most hopeful for as a Star Wars fan and as someone who has an interest in how the sausage is made, so to speak, I'm really interested in Hayden Christensen coming back, because I think that if he can come back and reprise his role as Anakin under a good director, no offense to George Lucas, then maybe the people who hate on him for some performance issues in the prequels will shut up. Because I think Hayden Christensen is a good actor.
Oh, yeah.
There were moments in the prequels where he did really, really well. There are moments in other movies he's done really, really well, non-Star Wars movies. And I think that because of very, very well-known issues with George Lucas's directing style, going all the way back to the late 70s, out of the mouths of Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and Harrison Ford themselves, that's not where Lucas's strengths as a director lies. He's in the editing and the creative vision and pulling everything together and pacing and storytelling. He's not a people person. If we can get Hayden Christensen under a good director, I think people will find a new appreciation for him as an actor. And I'm happy about that. I'm hopeful.
Yeah. I've liked Hayden and other stuff he's done. And I'm hoping he comes back and does a good job with this, because he has that potential.
Right.
Let's see. Also, some sad news. Now, we don't normally cover people that pass on the show a lot, but we kind of feel we should here. Grant Imahara passed away this past week at the age of 49. Evidently, it was a brain aneurysm. So nothing you could point to and say, oh, my God, it was, you know, for a long time.
Right.
Just kind of out of the blue. Very sad. He worked for ILM. He was a model maker. He's done a lot of stuff in Star Wars. He did stuff on Mythbusters.
Probably best known for Mythbusters, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Because the Star Wars stuff, he was there for it, but it was not a real well-known name in ILM, but at least outside of ILM, I should say. Very sad.
Had another spinoff series or something after Mythbusters ended, I think, that was kind of like another, it was like a Mythbusters spinoff, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
I've got, for those of you who are in our Discord server, remind me and I will post these videos. I went on a cruise that was part of a Jonathan Colton, who's very popular internet musician, does an annual cruise, and he'll invite different geek celebrities in, like Felicia Day and John Scalzi and John Hodgman and different musical guests and stuff. Will Wheaton was there on the cruise that I was on, and so was Grant Imahara. And there's a Star Trek simulation video game sort of thing where each player is part of the bridge but can only see their own station, and that's it, and you have to kind of coordinate. And they would, at midnight, they would do this celebrity Artemis thing, and they'd all be up on stage and, of course, wearing, like, Star Trek uniforms and stuff. And Grant was particularly inebriated, shall we say, and it was quite interesting. It was a funny set of videos. I'll post him in the Discord server, but the brief interaction I had with him, he was just a genuinely nice guy and seemed like a lot of fun. And this is really sad. He went too soon.
Yeah.
Yeah. This was, I was really sad by this. I mean, like you said, Eric, most people know him from Mythbusters. And the thing is, because of the stuff that he's done, he has really kind of touched on a lot of things across different fandoms that people may know or pay attention to. And we're mentioning it here specific to Star Wars. I mean, he worked on the prequels. He did a lot of stuff on the prequels. And that's really where he got a lot of his notoriety in the profession. He was a two-time Giant Nut winner
BattleBots.
Yeah, yep. BattleBots.
Was
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
For which robot?
Yeah. Early seasons. Very, very early seasons. It may have even been before it was like being regularly aired.
Okay, that may be.
This was very early on. Yeah.
Oh wow. So cool.
You know, I mean, Grant he's done a lot, and this is a guy who, I mean, I loved the original Mythbusters crew, and just, you know, I've watched so many of those episodes. I mean, I've probably watched 80% of those episodes, and then I've seen him in other things, and you know, the kind of guy, like brilliant mind. He would always find the fun in things, mm-hmm. You know, from what you could see in these shows, and always had a smile on his face. And the kind of outpouring of grief from a lot of folks who knew him and worked with him. You know, Adam Savage posted some stuff on social media, which was just like it just kind of, you know, grabbed you by the gut. The folks from ILM posted stuff, the Star Wars account posted things. So many people did, and it's just, you know, it's one of those things that, like, I realize the extent of the celebrities really that surround our fandoms that I follow on social media, because the day that he passed away, like it was a constant stream from all these people who, again, knew him and worked with him and stuff. And so just a huge loss. And, you know, Lou, like you said, I mean, a brain aneurysm, it's like so much, you know, typically very often we hear, oh, someone died of cancer, which is obviously mm-hmm. a really horrible, terrible thing. Or lately that they may have died from COVID-19, which is equally a horrible, terrible thing. But to hear that it's like a brain aneurysm, which to me, I mean, obviously it is something very different, but like psychologically, it's one of those things that poof, gone. Like there's no warning.
Yeah,
it's like
getting
hit by a bus. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it really just makes you, like, folks, you know, everyone who's listening to this, like, enjoy every freaking day of your life. I mean, don't let moments pass without taking advantage of it, because you never know when something like that's going to happen. And mm-hmm. it's something like this really, like, hits home, you know, with that.
Yeah.
Not to be like, you know, a real downer in this, but live it up.
Yeah.
Live it up.
Exactly. We'll just take a break from the news real quick to let people know how they can get a hold of us. Best way, follow us on Twitter. We are Random Chatter and Force Chatter on Twitter. You can find us on Instagram as well, the same places. Best way to interact with us probably is Discord. We have a Discord server as part of our website. Go to randomchatter.com/Discord to learn more about that. And of course, now that we're doing video shows, you can find us on YouTube. And I would like you to go out there and like and subscribe and watch one video after the other. Just kind of binge everything we have out there. That helps us out quite a bit. Mm-hmm. You can find us by going to randomchatter.com/YouTube. And now back to the news, or lack thereof, product wise. Black Series figures. Tim, you had alerted me to this the other day too, and I knew it was coming and I forgot about it. But Walmart has some exclusive Black Series figures. This is the new packaging stuff, the second version of the new packaging, I guess. Mm-hmm. And all based on the final season of Clone Wars.
Yep.
And they are not to be found. So not only are things not swinging on the pegs anymore, but you can't even pre-order this stuff.
I'm frustrated by this kind of stuff.
Okay, I've not read the show notes, but the show notes right here, I'm reading, it says Walmart exclusive Black Series figures up for pre-order. And now you're saying they're not up for pre-order, but
they'll show up as out of stock and email us when, or we'll email you when we find some.
Hey, Lou.
Yeah, Tim.
I got one.
What?
Yeah.
Lou, I got your back. I got your back, bud. Hold on. Watch this.
Sure, Tim.
Watch that. Look at that.
What?
Thank you. Thank you.
That's fine. I will be that light that's in the background there. When they first finally did come up on Walmart's site, which Lou knows, I mean, I was texting Lou like several times, like, hey, when the hell are these things coming up? Mm-hmm. They finally did. And every single one was sold out. Mm-hmm. And then, yes, I did exactly what you said, Lou, clicked on the button for, hey, we'll email you when it's back in stock.
And they did?
They did like 15 minutes later.
Wow. And
I'm
like,
oh, I'm in.
I never do those things because you never get the answer you're looking for. They're not going to email me.
Wow. So nice. I'm guessing that like they were given an initial run number from Hasbro and they hit that number and then went back to the well and said, hey, can you make us more? I don't know how that all happened, but it happened fast.
Here's the thing. So, it's a pre-order.
I know what Lou's going to say, and I'm on board. I already know what you're going to say. We haven't discussed this. I'm already on board with this.
I'm sure you know what you're saying. It's a pre-order. Mm-hmm. So we're producing, you're ordering them today for production, maybe a month from now, maybe 6 months from now. Even if you said, okay, we're going to pre-order them for a solid week or even just 24 hours, at the end of that time, you know exactly how many you have to produce.
The point of a pre-order is to gauge interest in a way that is tangible. And you don't have to guess. I don't know. Maybe we could make 1,000 of these. Like if you have 2,000 pre-orders, then you say, oh, we can make at least 2,500. Like that is the litmus test that you use to gauge the demand for which you are providing the supply in the supply and demand sort of ecosystem.
That's why my vendors come to me now. They say, okay, we want you to order snowblowers in April so we can have them ready for you in the fall. We get orders from all of our customers. We produce to those orders plus maybe 10% plus more, saving us some extra stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what they should do here.
Comic book industry's been doing it for years. You pre-sell. Yeah. You take orders for this much, and all of a sudden this comic issue blows up because it's the first appearance of Deadpool or something. Oh, we're going to go back and do a second printing. Like, right out of the gate.
Yeah. I don't understand how they don't get that.
And that's the thing that bugs me right now.
For a period of time, and we will make whatever you can sell.
Right. And why is it so hard to get, like, it's the most popular, I don't know. I'm not into collecting that heavily anymore, but my perception is that the Black Series figures are one of the single most popular Star Wars collectibles right now because, number one, aesthetically, they look really good.
Mm-hmm.
And number
they're getting better all the time.
They're affordable. I mean, they're $20 a pop, so they're not dirt cheap. But relatively speaking, I mean, that's in most people's price range.
If they want $80 or $100,
it's not a $350 Cotobuquilla statue.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's $20. I can handle that probably. So this is something that should be accessible to everybody, but you can't find them in stores because half the stores are shutting down or just not stocking anything.
Right.
You can't find them online anymore. So you're doing nothing but pissing off your fan base, pissing off your customer base.
And that was the thing, too. I mean, I've been in a couple of Walmarts over the course of the last few weeks, Walmarts or Targets, whatever.
Yeah, that's all I've been
and
to.
There is literally nothing on the shelves.
Literally nothing.
A section for Star Wars figure. I'm like, where
my
is
Walmart has had three Black Series figure boxes for the last probably 2.5 months. One Janna from the Solo movie and two of the same character, something else. I don't even remember what. That's it. Zero restock, zero anything. Mm-hmm. They're sitting on the same pegs. Like you haven't even had a customer pick it up and look at it and set it down on a different peg. I've watched.
Yeah.
Two or three months. That's it.
Yep.
Yep.
It just doesn't make any sense. I mean, you've got a captive audience. If you want to sell this stuff, people are ordering stuff ahead of time. I mean, I pre-ordered some of the last wave on Hasbro Pulse, right? I mean, they're coming in August or wherever it's supposed to be released.
Yeah.
And they're going to produce as much as they had sold, I imagine. But now they're sold out there, too. It's like, okay, I understand maybe you got a limit of how much you can sell. Or I mean, how much you can produce, fine. But, you know, at least take orders for more than, I mean, that was the same morning, Tim, when we saw that they were out of stock. I'm like, okay, when did you start selling them? When did they want, you know, was it midnight? Was it 8 a.m.? Was right. It, who knows? But it's frustrating that they can't give you more visibility to this stuff.
And then, you know, you've got the Mandalorian stuff that sold out right away or went for crazy prices.
Yep. Well, yeah. Speaking of exclusives coming out, I mean, this coming week is going to be Comic-Con at Home.
Yeah.
Or San Diego Comic-Con. Mm-hmm. And I saw Hallmark put up a video a couple of days ago for their exclusives, which they're going to sell online now.
Is it on this the 22nd. Week or is it the next?
It's this week. The 22nd is when they're doing the online thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'm like, okay. So there's a probe droid figure, not figure, but ornament. There's a Deadpool itty bitty, which looks awesome. And they've been doing those pixelate pins for a couple of years now. And the pixelate pin this year is the child.
Mm.
And I'm like, okay, it's Wednesday. I'm going to be at work. I'm never going to be able to get these things. So, Tim.
I want one too.
I'll talk to you later.
Hey, if you guys think of it, remind me when that time comes because I want to order one too.
Yeah, yeah. So. Just before we move on from this, just because we didn't really talk about what the figures were initially. Yeah. So, There's four of them. And again, these are from the...
Hold on. Before you go on, just because back to the Comic-Con thing, Carrie in the chat room just posted that Tom has a panel?
Yes.
Our Tom with Legal from Geeks. RandomChatter.com has a Legal Geeks... But not associated with Random Chatter. A Legal Geeks correct. Panel at San Diego Comic-Con at Home?
Yes, he does.
And when would people... So first of all, do we know yet whether it's just in scheduled blocks or whether the videos are available afterwards? And then number two, can someone tell us when Tom's panel is? Because I kind of feel like, you know, as part of the Random Chatter family, we should let people know that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Carrie says she already has on her calendar, so she must know when it is.
Yes, but there's also that... trademarked 30-second delay that Twitch has. So
right.
<you know.
laughs> Right. So let's see. Tom is doing it. It will be Saturday, July 25th.
Okay.
And the panel is.
It's titled. That's with three M's, not two and not four.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Let's see. It is the Ultra Lawyer Kaiju Patrol. So I don't believe what he's doing is Star Wars related.
That's okay.
But
we like other things besides Star Wars too. All Star Wars fans do.
So he will be
Kaiju as in like the big giant monster thingies.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
Okay.
So yes, it does look like what we'll actually be talking about this a little bit more on Random Chatter.
Joe, there's no Star Wars presence at San Diego Comic-Con at Home that we are aware of. Is that correct?
No. If you look a little bit further in the show notes, there is something.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Joe, you are about to find out.
Yes.
Sorry.
So they will be on, they will be live streamed on YouTube. Yay. Not something crappy like Facebook, whatever it is. So they'll be on YouTube, and because they'll be on YouTube, that then means they'll be archived. So you'll be able to view them presumably immediately thereafter. Excellent. But everything will be live streamed on a particular schedule. Look for Comic-Con at Home and or San Diego Comic-Con, because that's the same thing this year. Mm-hmm. And they have their schedule up there. So, yes, right.
I apologize for interrupting you, Tim. Part of the network. He's an important, all of our members are important parts of the network, whether they do a lot of shows or just one. And I wanted to make sure that we promoted that before we moved on from
that.
So,
yeah. And I'm glad. Thank you, Carrie, for reminding us, because I did not have it noted in our shows. I'll be sure to mention that over on Random Chatter also. Mm-hmm. So, real quick before we go off of this, for these 6-inch Black Series figures in this release, again, these are from the last season of the Clone Wars. So they are of that particular arc concept. So you have basically the latest version of Ahsoka from there, with the basically the very gray, the very gray tone uniform. You have the Mando Super Commando. And if you recall, that's the one, basically these are the ones who were part of Darth Maul's group of Mandos. So they had the helmets with the spikes on them, mm-hmm. which is, the concept is cool, but the execution, eh. You then also have the insanely bland Mandalorian loyalists, which are simply the Mandos with gray and blue. And they all look the same. And yeah, so, and then you have the 332nd Division of the 501st, which were Ahsoka's clone troopers with the Ahsoka helmet painted art
face. Yeah.
Who all tried to kill her.
Yeah.
Because that's what you do. You take out your boss, instant promotion, right?
And quite honestly, they looked way cooler in the show than they do an action figure.
The helmet just look all that great.
No. So truly out of all this, at least in my opinion, the Ahsoka one is the one worth getting. The others were just kind of mundane to me. So, but that's just my take.
The Mandos may be nice to have. I mean, they're not really super cool looking, but I would definitely say they're worth picking up.
Yeah. And you know, if you want to build like an army of Mandalorians, you can buy like 10 of those Mando loyalists.
No, Tim, you can't buy like 10 of those because nobody has them.
Good luck finding three.
Good luck finding one.
Yeah.
Anyway. That Ahsoka does look pretty good.
It does. Yeah.
I think I like that Ahsoka better than the other Ahsoka I've got with the, like the orange type stuff. I just like this color scheme better.
I do too. Yeah. She's more mature. Yeah. We also have a Lego announcement here.
Oh, my gosh.
So I haven't seen any pictures of this. Have you seen photos of this, rumors of this or anything? Or
there are no photos of this at all. And there are no descriptions of it because it is solely a rumor. I can tell you what I can tell you what I hope slash think it is.
Okay.
Lou, do you want to like talk about this before I dive into it, or do you just want me to go?
No, go right ahead. Yeah, because we don't have a lot of detail on it, and my reading of this is the first I've heard about it, so you take it away.
Okay, so what this is, and again, this is a rumor. It is what Lego has as their Master Builder series, and the Master Builder series are like the giant buildings and that kind of stuff that they've done. As opposed to the Ultimate Collector series, which is a little bit different and to date has really just been ships and a couple of vehicles. But because this is more of like building slash landscape kind of thing, I believe that this is what they're going with this for Master Builder series. Master Builder series are direct to consumer, so you can only order these from Lego.com. There's no retail sales on this. If you want to get a jump on this, if and when it does come out, again, this is just a rumor, you should become a Lego member, which is free. And you usually will get like, I don't know, the first 48 hour access to it or something. The rumor includes that it will be a September release. Based on other Master Builder series sets, we're looking at like 3,500 pieces, somewhere around there, which will give us a price range of around $350 to $400. So it's steep. It's big. Mm-hmm. My guess is that, so there has been a Mos Eisley Cantina set out before, and it was kind of mundane. It was simply like an outside type of thing. So like if you're walking down the street in Mos Eisley, here's the front of the cantina. That's really all it was. It wasn't the inside. My guess is that this is going to be a full out like diorama of the inside of the cantina. So you'll have the full horseshoe shaped bar with all the accoutrement and all the stuff there and your bartender. And you're going to have the band in one corner, and you're going to have you're going to have booths, and one of them, you know, you can put Han and Greedo in, and you're going to have Dr. Evazan and Luke and Chewie and Obi-Wan. And I, so I'm guessing there's going to be an epic crap ton of minifigs that are going to come with this thing.
Are we going to get Moma Nadon? Are we going to get Dan's Boren? Are we going to get Bane Malar? Are we going to get the Tanika sisters?
I think there's a great opportunity to get minifigs out there that have either never been done or maybe only been done once before to put them in this set. Because I think that that's going to be like the crown jewel of this, that you easily could get 20 minifigs in this one set, and it could just be freaking huge and amazing and wonderful and awesome.
Yeah.
So the other one that's out there, the Betrayal of Cloud City, is another one of these master builder sets. And that one had 21 minifigs in it. And that was around 350, I think, for that set. If I'm finding this information right online here. But that was like had four different sections of the Cloud City, and you could get into different parts of it. And the diorama was each one of those. And, you know, 21 minifigs is a pretty good haul if you're a minifig collector. So
cool. Yeah,
this is exciting. I mean, I'm not a big playset fan, but, you know, people that are, and especially minifig collectors, it'd be pretty cool for them.
Yeah, so the minifigs might make it.
Yeah, pretty expensive for minifigs, but hey. let's see. To me, a story here for Alden Ehrenreich talking about some stuff about a Solo sequel. I hadn't heard anything about this because it's been
so,
I think, in my head. But
yeah, I don't know what link you guys have here, but there have been two times now that it's come up. The most recent one, the implication was that he may be coming back in some way.
Now, yeah.
Whether this is a sequel,
which may not necessarily be a Solo 2,
right?
But something.
It could be a Lando movie. It could be in Mandalorian season 3. It could be
sure.
The Kenobi series. You know, Obi-Wan Kenobi knew Chewbacca and Han Solo before A New Hope. He's true. Who introduced Luke to Han and Chewie. So maybe this is where Obi-Wan meets Han. In the Kenobi
series.
And I
would love to see the whole tie-in with Maul and Crimson Dawn and that kind of stuff in this as well.
I want a Kira movie.
Yeah, that's what is really
intriguing. Yeah, and to bring Kira into it and all that. There is such a story there that they set up at the very end of this.
Yeah.
Of Solo, which I actually just watched again a couple days ago. And I just, it makes me, and then I saw this and I'm like, oh, wow, really? This is awesome. So, I mean, Alden Ehrenreich, he's actually promoting another movie that he's in, and I don't remember what the name of it is.
TV series.
Brave New World.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He was in
an interview with Esquire, and he was apparently asked about it. And basically, his only response was, I've heard some stuff, but nothing concrete. So, it's being discussed, and it's
for... Something's happened.
Yeah, and it's being discussed with him. So if it's being discussed with him, that's good. We don't know if they put him on a, you know, multi-film or some other kind of contract, which might include like Disney Plus or something like that.
It's but almost certain they did. Almost certain.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they would kind of want to have those rights for it, and especially given how it was closed out. Like,
right.
They didn't even crack the door open for a sequel. Like they kicked the door open for a sequel or for at least continuing
not a
story.
Sequel, but a continuing story. And I think you're absolutely right. Yeah. Cause you know, I, given what we had first for Solo and what happened with the release and the money and everything else, I doubt we're ever going to get a Solo sequel, but if we get something else out of that, a spinoff or something tangentially related to that, I'd be more than happy with that.
Well, it would be really interesting because it may not be Solo 2, but it could very well be. Actually, Joe just said in the chat that he has three movies in his contract. That's interesting.
I thought he had more than just the one. Yeah.
So while it might not be Solo 2, it could be
Lando.
It could be Lando, the movie. It could be Darth Maul, the movie. It could be Crimson Dawn, the movie. We don't know. So I mean, if Black he has Sun. Movie, it could be Black Sun. If he has movie contracts, then yeah, chances are it's probably going to be a movie. Maybe they'll be able to amend that contract to get him into some kind of Disney Plus thing. Like if he's going to somehow be in Obi-Wan.
The movies don't necessarily have to indicate theatrical release. So he could be in a Disney Plus movie.
Yeah. And I imagine they were far enough along with Disney Plus that they would have had that written into his contract up front.
Perhaps.
Probably. We're going to use you and other stuff. We may need you here and may need you there.
And honestly, if they went and said, hey, Alden, listen, can we amend your contract? And instead of three movies, agree to like three seasons of television or something like that. Like, I'm sure he's going to be willing to work with them because money. Like, it's.
Yeah.
I know I wouldn't turn it down. I think, you know, we really need to have an episode maybe in a slow news week where we kind of take a look at the future of where Star Wars projects are going in a more specific way. We kind of touched on it a few weeks ago, but I think that they're, I really think that as some of these rumors are starting to come out a little bit more, and it looks like there's going to be, at least from my assertion, some sort of like a Filoni verse. And then, I really think that they're still going to be doing theatrical releases, but I think there's going to be a big shift more in doing the solo type, what we were used to refer to as the anthology films. I think they are going to back to doing those. They're just going to be bringing them to Disney Plus. Now that they've got the production costs down in part due to the volume, the production mechanism they used for The Mandalorian. And I think that they're trying to bring things down to smaller scale and tell smaller stories with some of these things now. And Disney Plus is a really good venue for that because the expectations are a lot smaller than they are with something in a theatrical release.
So much stuff coming to streaming versus theatrical release nowadays, because we don't know when movie theater is going to reopen. I mean,
if you look at the scale of things like Mandalorian versus what you think of as a Star Wars theatrical release, The Mandalorian's not very epic. It's not very large scale. It's a small scale story.
And but you know what I would absolutely pay for? If they were to do a theatrical release of The Mandalorian in, say, three parts, I would go see that. I would want to see that on the big screen. There was enough stuff there to motivate me
from a technical to see it on the big screen,
even though I already have seen it.
I mean, you know, I mean,
discounted
tickets. With the way things are going as far as releasing in theaters and pandemic and everything else.
After all this,
the more I like my couch, the more I like my TV and my surround sound system. It's like, you know,
But I think that part of the shift, and I know we got to wrap up the episode here, so I'll just say this and we can discuss it more on a different episode or a different show even. But I think that what's going on with the pandemic, I think there are a lot of projects that are trying to streamline more. They're trying to see how much can we get away with doing with a smaller budget, with fewer people, with less production overhead, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that that form of story of movie making and television making is probably going to continue. And of course, with the emphasis on streaming networks, the investment of streaming networks into projects like that. Again, I think The Mandalorian is much smaller scale than what we would have gotten theaters. And yet, instead of getting a Boba Fett movie with Josh Trank, we got The Mandalorian with Jon Favreau. I think we will get something in what we'll call the Soloverse, except it will be on Disney Plus. I think Disney Plus is where Solo probably should have been anyway, kind of. Like, I'm not upset that it got released theatrically, but like it. Solo fits Disney Plus really well. And I think moving forward with that, Solo related projects would fit Disney Plus really well, would fit a streaming service really well.
Eric.
Yeah.
Mud Troopers needed to be on the big screen. They deserved it.
I have to agree.
Because you guys both cosplay as Mud Troopers. I have a Mud Trooper baseball cap that I wear at work every day with like a bump cap on it when I work on machines and stuff. Yeah.
Like the one from the Smuggler's Bounty thing?
I don't know. I didn't see the one in the Smuggler's Bounty.
Eric represents. I'm proud of you.
I got pictures. I'll send you guys pictures if you want.
Please do. I am proud of you, Eric. Thank you. It's just a baseball cap.
It is the mud cap. It's just the mud trooper cap with the Imperial signal and that mud trooper green sort
that's,
of.
That's yeah. probably the one from Slugger's Bounty. Yeah, it came in one of the packs.
Is it?
So jealous.
Yeah, I got it mine through Amazon, but I didn't get it through Smuggler's Bounty. But I've got one and I represent. I'm just saying, I think solo spinoffs and stuff, I think they think it's viable for Disney Plus, but I think they feel like they've proven it's not in the theaters. So I think that this is a way where it could have a home, whereas otherwise it's going to be orphaned forever.
Sure, sure. Well, we got one last quick story here before we run out, because we are running out of time here because we got another show to record. Speaking of Comic-Con at home, we have a Star Wars publishing panel.
You mentioned something, yeah.
This will be on Friday, July 24th at noon. And among others, we'll just say, you know, Tim's on. So, yeah, tune into that. Because, this should be pretty cool. I mean, the publishing panels I've always seen in New York Comic Con have been good. It's always great to get the insights of what's coming up, and it gets you excited and pumped and juiced for new stories to read. So,
do we know whether this is to talk about future projects, or is this kind of a Q&A? Future projects?
This is all, from what I understand, this is future projects. Every one of the listed authors has something in the works on the release list.
Good. I was going to see if maybe we could like do some group streaming of these things, but I'm going to be sleeping because I work those nights. But maybe we need to have, maybe over the weekend, we will pick some highlights.
That'd be cool.
From that, either maybe Saturday night or Sunday afternoon or something like that. I can go ahead and piece together the different clips, and maybe we can hang out here and show some clips and give some reactions to it, get a chat room and stuff going. If people want more information on that, join our Discord server, randomchatter.com/Discord, and we'll keep you guys posted on exactly how we're going to do that. Depending on how much content there is, maybe we'll need to spread that out. It'll be Star Wars and non-Star Wars stuff. But And then, of course, like Tim, if, you know, GMCU guys want to join in, or Carrie, if you and Mike and any other DC people want to join in on the applicable content, we can rotate our hosts through and we'll have a little random ChatterCon.
Yeah, totally.
Sounds good.
ChatterCon.
Okay, so thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks to the chat room for being here with us. It's always good to have a live audience with us. And we'll come back at you guys in about a week.